Good morning, and welcome to the Thursday, March 31st, 2022 meeting of the Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Directions to members. As you know, you have the contents of your virtual packets available to you. And for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Damith?
Present.
Representative Dravkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott, present.
Representative Shung? Representative Shung? Representative Joaquin?
Joaquin, present.
Mr. Chair, report, we have quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Representative Sandstein, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Wednesday, March 30th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of the same?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have reviewed the minutes from Wednesday, March 30th, and I move them for approval.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Sandstein motion, members? Seeing none, members, this is a voice vote. Please unmute your mics. All in favor of the Sandstein motion approving the minutes from Wednesday, March 30th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sandstein. Members, our first bill hearing for today is House File 3401 from Representative Richardson. It's our intention to lay this bill over by 11:30 a.m. Chair Richardson, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3401 before the committee and to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Before you introduce your bill, I understand you have an author's amendment you'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape you'd prefer. Would you like to move the A11 amendment?
So moved.
Could you describe the amendment for the members, please?
The A11 amendment has a technical amendment and a few substantive changes. I'll speak through the more substantive amendments. It clarifies language related to supplemental online learning to reflect the intent of the proposal from MDE, which allows a student enrolled in a non-public school to participate in a supplemental online learning program offered by another school district. There are several amendments to the recess for all bill. It encourages school boards to adopt policies that promote understanding when a child is not meeting the expectations of adults as a reflection that skills may need to be developed and requires school districts to support staff in using tiered interventions. It defines recess detention and clarifies that it does not include providing alternative recess. It also restricts the situations in which a school school district or charter school can use recess detention to cases where a student causes or is likely to cause serious physical harm to other students or staff. The student's parent or guardians specifically consents to the recess detention, or the student's IEP team has determined that recess detention is appropriate based on the needs of the student. It also requires district and charter schools to make reasonable attempts to notify a parent or guardian within 24 hours of a recess detention, and implements a reporting requirement on recess detention on age, grade, gender, race, or ethnicity, and special education status. And that information would be available to the public upon request. It also prohibits school districts from withholding or excessively delaying a student's participation in scheduled mealtimes. And the last amendment makes the requirement that school districts and charters maintain a supply of opiate antagonists permissive rather than required.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Members, any discussion to the Richardson motion for the A11? This is an author's amendment to get the bill in the form that she prefers. Seeing none, members, again, this is a voice vote. If you would please unmute. All in favor of the Richardson amendment, the Richardson motion on the A11 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Richardson. With that, Representative Richardson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Pera is graciously going to do a walkthrough of the bill this morning. But I would just like to take this opportunity to thank all of the staff and the team that went into constructing the omnibus bill. It takes a lot of work, and I really appreciate all of the efforts of everyone that helped to get us to this place. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll yield my time to Ms. Pera to do a walkthrough of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Ms. Pera.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be walking through the bill, starting with Article 1, Section 1. Replaces Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day on the list of holidays this school district may conduct school. It requires at least 1 hour of the program that day to be devoted to observance of the day and lists topics on which the district may provide professional development or instruction to students. Section 2 allows a school board to designate a facility or program within a facility or district as an education site. Section 3 increases the maximum amount a school board member who is employed by the district can earn from that employment from $8,000 to $20,000. Section 4 modifies definitions related to online learning. It distinguishes supplemental online learning from other types of online learning and establishes additional requirements for teachers providing online instruction. I should note that there's a number of online learning changes here in this article, and those generally go into effect in the 23-24 school year. There's an exception that we'll note later on. Section 4 allows districts to offer digital learning to enrolled students without going through the review and reporting requirements that apply to other online learning providers. Those districts would not generate online learning funds. Section 6 modifies the requirements relating to accessing online learning, including the ones that relate to computer hardware and locations where the student may participate. And it also requires online learning curriculum to be aligned with state standards. Section 7 requires a supplemental online learning provider to notify the commissioner that it is delivering online learning and to report the number of online learning students it accepts and the courses and programs it delivers. Section 8, this is the section that would go into effect immediately. And for the current school year, the notification requirements wouldn't apply. Section 8 is a crisis online learning section. It defines crisis online learning and related terms, and it requires a plan that describes how crisis online learning and critical components of education will be provided. Section 9 modifies the description of students who qualify as what are known as SLAFE, which is students with limited or interrupted formal education. And it modifies that based on the amount of formal education the students receive before they enter school in the United States. Section 10 then allows the students that would be now excluded under that definition, that new definition, to continue to qualify for an early middle college program by saying they still qualify for the graduation incentives program. Section 11 modifies the definition of American Indian student for purposes of the American Indian Education Act. It uses the state definition, which differs from the federal definition. Section 12 requires the commissioner to use an annual report of American Indian student data that uses the state count when providing technical assistance. Section 13 requires the state count to be used to determine whether a district, charter school, or tribal contract school is eligible for American Indian aid. Section 14 specifies how the state determines the state-identified American Indian student counts. Section 15 allows a district or charter school to use an online learning program to fulfill its duties to provide special education services to a child in a care and treatment facility. Section 16 allows also a district or charter school to use online learning. This section is about children without disabilities, so to provide education services to a child in care and treatment. Section 17 allows a district to use online learning for students placed in residential facilities. Article 2, Education Excellence. Section 1 allows educational data to be disclosed to tribal nations about tribally enrolled or descendant students. Section 2 requires student records when they're transmitted. When a student transfers schools, those records would have to include pupil withdrawals and services a student needs to prevent inappropriate behavior from occurring. Section 3 adds ethnic studies to the list of subject areas in which all students must receive instruction. Section 4 adds art to the list of required state standards. Currently, those are adopted at the district level, so there are several sections in here that would make that change from local standards to state standards, including Section 5, which notes that change to state standards and adds a fifth art area, media arts. Section 6 requires the commissioner to consider advice from the following additional stakeholders when revising academic standards: representatives from the Tribal Nations Education Committee and Minnesota's Tribal Nations and Communities, district and charter school students in kindergarten through 12th grade, and other stakeholders representing the ethnic, racial, and geographic diversity of Minnesota, including diversity of gender and sexual orientation, immigrant status, and religious and linguistic background. Section 7 clarifies the commissioner's authority to amend rules on academic standards. Section 8 requires Indigenous education standards that include the contributions of American Indian tribes and communities to be embedded into academic standards and graduation requirements. Also requires that ethnic studies be embedded into state academic standards and delays review of physical education standards by 4 years. Section 9 requires a district to regularly review its career and technical education standards for those to align with either Minnesota career and technical education frameworks, national standards, or recognized industry standards. Section 10 requires, again, that arts credit to be state rather than local. It requires the 3.5 social studies credits needed for graduation to include credit for a course in government and citizenship for students in grade 11 or 12, and requires students also in their senior year to complete a personal finance course for credit. Section 11 modifies a reference to a school's agriculture program to include food and natural resources education, and changes a rule of reference change. Section 12 defines ethnic studies curriculum. Section 13 strikes language encouraging schools not to exclude students from recess. Additional language is included later on about recess. Section 14 adds definitions for ethnic studies curriculum, anti-racist, culturally sustaining, institutional racism, and on-track graduation to the world's best workforce statute. Section 15 adds performance measures in the world's best workforce plan to include participation in honors or gifted and talented programming and students being on track for graduation. It also requires districts to report on participation and performance in advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and dual enrollment. And those reports have to be done by student subgroup. Section 16 requires districts' world's best workforce plans to include ethnic studies curriculum and anti-racist and culturally sustaining curriculum and modifies other plan requirements. Section 17 requires districts' advisory committee to recommend strategies regarding curriculum and learning and work environments. Section 18 establishes a new grant program to support districts' world's best workforce strategies and collaborative efforts that address opportunity gaps. That's a grant that will be administered by the commissioner, and there are specified ways that the grants would be used. Section 19 requires, it modifies the gifted and talented statute requiring services in addition to programs. It requires that identification assessments and procedures be sensitive and equitable to underrepresented groups and be coordinated for optimal identification of programs and services for underrepresented groups. Section 20 modifies the attendance measure used in the statewide reporting system from average daily attendance to consistent attendance and substitutes ACT for the American College Test. Section 21 strikes definitions related to adaptive assessments and above grade level or below grade level questions. So those apply to the MCA test that students take. Section 22 modifies the date by which a district or charter school must publish its testing calendar. Section 23 modifies the use of growth measures and the demographic categories for student data reporting. Section 24 strikes growth targets from the list of actions the department undertakes. Section 25 prohibits American Indian mascots, but allows a district to seek an exemption from the Tribal Nations Education Committee and the Indian Affairs Council. Section 26 defines the Minnesota multi-tiered systems of support and lists required components of MTSS. Section 28, which modifies the definition of suspension by separating in-school and out-of-school suspension. And then Section 27 modifies the definition of dismissal to include just the out-of-school suspensions, the in-school ones. Section 29 defines non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices as alternatives to removal or dismissal that require school officials to intervene in, redirect, and support student behavior before removal or dismissal. Section 30 defines a pupil withdrawal agreement and limits that to 12 months. Section 31 prohibits dismissal of a student in kindergarten through grade three, unless non-exclusionary discipline measures have been exhausted and there is an ongoing serious safety threat to the child or others. Section 32 requires a school to use non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices before dismissal proceedings or pupil withdrawal agreements. Section 33 requires schools to provide alternative education services to students who are suspended more than five consecutive school days. Section 34 requires school officials to give suspended students the opportunity to complete all schoolwork assigned during the suspension and receive full credit for the assignments. Section 35 requires a written notice of intent to impose an expulsion to describe the non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices offered to the student to avoid the expulsion. Section 36 requires an admission or readmission plan to include measures to improve the student's behavior and lists optional elements of the plan. It also requires the plan to include parental involvement. Section 37 requires districts to report on pupil withdrawal agreements and non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices to the commissioner. Section 38 requires school discipline policies to include non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices and to make sure students who have been expelled or excluded or withdrawn are on track for readmission and remain eligible for school-based or school-linked mental health services. Section 39 requires a discipline policy to contain a procedure to file a complaint against, file a complaint regarding the application of the policy, discipline policies and seek corrective action. Section 40 requires the policy to include procedures to ensure victims of bullying who respond with prohibited behavior have access to remedial response consistent with the bullying statute and contains other prohibitions relating to exclusionary practices. Section 41 requires discipline policies to have procedures for students, parents, guardians, and school staff to file a complaint and seek corrective action when student discipline statutes are not being implemented appropriately. Section 42, returning to the recess, prohibits teachers, and again, this was amended by the A11, but I'll just describe it briefly. It prohibits a teacher, school employee, or agent of the district or charter school from excluding a student in elementary school from participating in recess or punish or discipline the student. Section 43 prohibits a post-secondary institution that participates in PSEO, which is Post-Secondary Enrollment Options Act, enrollment options from requiring a faith statement for a PSEO student during the application process or basing an admissions decision based on the student's race, creed, ethnicity, disability, gender, or sexual orientation or religious beliefs or affiliations. Section 44 limits when post-secondary institutions can provide information to high school students and parents. This is known as the gag rule, so it's eliminating that. Section 45 requires a high school and post-secondary institution that enroll students in concurrent enrollment courses to report to the commissioner the participation rates of students in courses. Section 46 requires the school board to adopt the same weighted grade point average policy for credits earned through PSEO as it does for credits earned through concurrent enrollment. Section 47 reduces the withdrawal and absence periods from the first 14 to the first 10 business days of the quarter or semester, which accelerates the time that the department stops payment to the post-secondary institution when a student withdraws or stops attending. Section 48 eliminates the provision that permits students to participate in a learning year program and accelerate grades or graduation requirements. Section 49 clarifies that American Indian Education Program students are designed, American Indian Education Programs are designed to support American Indian students. Section 50 limits enrollment in American Indian Education Programs on a share time basis to American Indian children. Section 51 modifies the settings where American Indian Education Programs may be offered on a daily basis. Section 52 requires a district or tribal contract school that conducts American Indian Education Programs under the American Indian Education Act and serves 100 or more state-identified American Indian students to provide American Indian culture and language classes. Section 53 requires districts and tribal contract schools to employ dedicated American Indian Education Program coordinators rather than community coordinators or Indian homeschool liaisons. Section 54 modifies the parent community participation statute within the American Indian Education Act. So it modifies the eligibility for membership in the parent advisory committee, requirements relating to the committee's vote of concurrence or non-concurrence with the offerings extended to American Indian students. And it also requires the state identified American Indian student count to be used. Section 55 modifies duties of the American Indian Direct Education Director and references to the parties with whom the director must work collaboratively and in conjunction with. Section 56 requires a district or charter school to allow an American Indian student to wear American Indian regalia, tribal regalia, or objects of cultural significance at graduation ceremonies. Section 57 clarifies that charter schools may receive American Indian education aid. Section 58 strikes pilot from the description of American Indian education programs. Section 59 modifies the achievement and integration statute, specifically the plan requirements, It requires those plans to include strategies to validate, affirm, embrace, and integrate cultural and community strengths, address institutional racism, use local data to develop plan components and strategies, and implement interventions to eliminate academic disparities for students impacted by racial, gender, linguistic, and economic inequities. Section 60 broadens the application of restrictive procedure statutes from only students with disabilities to all students. Section 61 broadens the role of the Oversight Committee to review the use of restrictive procedures for disproportionality, racial disparities, usage of restrictive procedures, involvement of school resource officers, and other listed items. Section 62 modifies the requirements for a meeting, since it's currently only for students with disabilities. Right now it's an IEP meeting, so that requirement is for the meeting is modified to include other students. Section 63 requires a debriefing process following the use of a restrictive procedure. Section 64 allows an American Indian student to carry a medicine pouch containing loose tobacco intended in observance of traditional spiritual or cultural practices. Section 65 requires districts and schools selected to participate in national assessment of educational progress or similar assessments to do so. Section 66 is a revised instruction to renumber statutory provisions relating to state assessments and reporting requirements. And Section 67 is a repealer. It repeals a statute related to students with emotional or behavioral disorders. Article 3 is the teacher's article. Section 1 establishes a state goal to increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota, to increase that percentage by at least 2 percentage points per year, to have a teaching workforce that more closely reflects the student population, and ensure students have equitable access to effective and diverse teachers by 2040. And it requires PELSBY to report on the outcomes of state programs related to the preparation or retention of diverse teachers. Section 2 requires a school board to adopt a policy that prohibits discrimination or discipline for a teacher or principal for incorporating into curriculum contributions by persons in a protected class. Section 3 requires PELSBY to identify teacher shortage areas based on the number of assignments a district is unable to fill with a licensed teacher, the number of out-of-field permissions issued, and the number of Tier 1 licenses issued in fields of board-approved preparation programs. Section 4 requires the teacher supply and demand report to include district data on the number of teachers hired in the preceding 2 years, the numbers of teachers hired holding a license at each tier level, and the number of assignments the district was unable to fill with a licensed teacher, and licenses and permissions for fields with board-approved preparation programs by economic development regions. Section 5 requires the Board of School Administrators to adopt rules requiring school administrators renewing a license to have at least 2 hours of mental illness training, including at least 1 hour of suicide prevention training. Section 6 eliminates the exclusion of Tier 1 teachers from the definition of teacher, which would allow Tier 1 teachers to be in the same bargaining unit as other teachers. Section 7 requires PELSBY to issue a Tier 3 license to a candidate who either completed a preparation program from a culturally specific minority-serving institution and is eligible for a teacher license in another state, or who completed a preparation program in another country and has taught at least 2 years. A candidate would still need to complete student teaching comparable to Minnesota requirements. Section 8 allows a candidate for a Tier 4 license to meet teaching experience requirement with experience in another state. Section 9 strikes the skill test requirement for Tier 4 license, and it eliminates the pedagogy and content exam requirements for candidates who complete Minnesota teacher preparation programs. And candidates who completed programs in other states where they passed those exams. It also requires PELSBY to adopt rules allowing for performance assessment instead of an examination, and it requires testing centers to provide monthly opportunities for on-time content of pedagogy exams and to have to take the exams for free after two attempts. Section 10 requires a district to report new teacher hires and terminations by race and ethnicity annually to PELSWE. So you see this in section 10 and you'll again in section 15 to reflect that some are for one statute is for district and cities of first class and the other outside cities of first class. Section 11 and 13 modifies the probationary period for a teacher who taught for three consecutive years in a single district or charter school in Minnesota or another state. So that would only be a one-year probationary period rather than a three-year. Sections 12 and 14 require district to use a rubric or performance standards for teacher practice that includes teachers' cultural responsiveness and have common descriptions of effectiveness using at least three levels of performance. Section 16 requires collective bargaining agreements for teachers to include provisions for due process forms and procedures for teachers that work with students receiving special education services. If the parties can't agree on language, there's a default language that would go in, giving teachers an average of 60 minutes per day, in addition to the required preparation time. Section 17 modifies the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant Program. It requires applicants to submit a plan describing how they would use grant funds. It modifies the priority order for criteria. It modifies how PELSWE administers the grant program and modifies reporting requirements for the grantees. Section 18 modifies the teacher mentorship grant funds, how those grant funds are used, requires PELSWE to prioritize grants for efforts to induct, mentor, and retain tier two or three teachers who are of color or American Indian, and tier two or three teachers in license shortage areas. Section 19 requires principal evaluations to support and improve principals' culturally responsive leadership practices. Section 20 requires the next teacher supply and demand report, which would come out in 2023, to report the number of teacher openings by district for teachers with licenses in specified fields, and for each field to include the number of teachers hired by district at each license level and the number of assignments the district was unable to fill with a licensed teacher. Article 4, charter schools. Section 1 has several definitions, including for charter management organization, education management organization, and market need and demand study. So the next several sections are about statutory requirements that charter schools would be required to comply with. In Section 2, it's the statute and alternatives to suspension. Section 3, it's the Education for English Learners Act. Section 4 modifies the term of a charter school authorizer, so it would be open-ended rather than 5 years. Section 5 amends the authorizer withdrawal requirements. Section 6 requires an authorizer application to include a market need and demand study. Section 7, the authorizer's affidavit would have to include a market need and demand study. Section 8, an authorizer before approving a charter school's application to add grades or primary enrollment sites, there would need to be a market need and demand study filed with the commissioner. Section 9 requires teachers serving on a charter school board of directors to meet the definition of licensed teacher. Section 10 modifies charter school admissions requirements. So it requires admission to be free to residents of Minnesota and gives enrollment preference to Minnesota residents over out-of-state residents. It requires students in the school's pre-K program to apply for entry into kindergarten without receiving an enrollment preference. And it also modifies admissions preferences for schools that serve at least 90% of enrolled students who are eligible for special education services and have a primary disability of deaf, hard of hearing, or deaf-blind. The school will be able to give those students an enrollment preference but they would not be able to limit admission based on the child's eligibility for other special education services. Section 11 requires a charter school to lease space from the owner of the space rather than subleasing it. Section 12 prohibits an affiliated building corporation from supporting more than one charter school. Section 13 requires a charter management organization or educational management organization to submit an audit report to the commissioner annually. And Section 14 strikes an obsolete reference to the chapter on cooperatives. Article 5, Health and Safety. Section 1 strongly encourages school districts and charter schools to provide substance misuse awareness and prevention instruction. And it requires that instruction be evidence-based. Section 2 strikes language encouraging districts to provide instruction to reduce prohibited conduct, and it replaces that encouragement with a requirement that districts engage students in creating safe and supportive school environments and take other actions. Section 3 requires the commissioner to develop procedures for reviewing district and school programs and policies on evidence-based social-emotional learning, maintain resources to help schools implement strategies to create a positive school climate, and use evidence-based social-emotional learning to prevent and reduce discrimination and other improper conduct, and develop and adapt state-level social-emotional learning standards. Section 4 defines malicious and sadistic conduct and requires school boards to prohibit this conduct. It involves race, religion, disability, sexual harassment, sexual orientation, and sexual exploitation by a district or school staff member or student against another staff member or student. Malicious conduct, sadistic conduct means creating hostile learning environment by acting with the intent to cause harm, by intentionally injuring another without just cause or reason, or engaging in extreme or excessive cruelty, or delighting in cruelty. Section 5 requires a school board or charter school, to the extent they receive non-public funds or in-kind contributions, to have posters with the National Child Abuse Hotline number, or otherwise provide students notice of the number. Section 6, and this is also in the amendment, in the first engrossment, it requires the districts or charter schools to maintain a supply of opiate antagonists at each school site. The amendment makes that it's not mandatory. It simply allows them to maintain that supply. Article 6, nutrition and libraries. And I'm just going to note there are a number of sections that make a single change, changing from free and reduced price lunch to free and reduced price meals. So that is in sections 1, 2, 4 through 12, and 17 to 20. So I'll skip over those and just go through the other ones. Section 3 is the summer food service program and child and adult care food program. It limits how often legally distinct child and adult care food program and summer food service program sites can transfer sponsoring organizations to once per year. It requires a non-governmental organization to provide documentation to the department, verifying that staff has gone through certain training before applying to sponsor a child and adult care food program and summer food serving program service program site. And prohibits approval of a new summer food service program's open site that is within a half mile of an existing site, unless the new program will not serve the same group of children for the same meal type. So skipping through the meal ones, Section 9 lists the characteristics of a school library or school library media center. Section 13 substitutes resident for citizen in the provision regarding the responsibility of the state to provide library services. Section 14 makes a technical change to the name of National Library Service. Section 15 substitutes English language learners for Spanish speaking and the list of examples of innovative and experimental library programs. Section 16 requires the regional library basic system support aid recipients to comply with reduced maintenance of effort requirements. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for that, Ms. Barrow. Members, we will go to some public testimony before going to member questions. There's a lot there. So thank you to Ms. Barrow for walking us through that. First on my list of testifiers is Commissioner Mueller. Commissioner Mueller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Good to see you this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Heather Mueller, Commissioner of Education. It's good to see you all this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to share my support for Chair Richardson's education policy omnibus bill. I first want to thank her for including so many provisions from the governor and lieutenant governor's policy bill, which is predicated on our Due North education plan and seeks to work toward the goal that every student receives a high quality education, no matter their race or zip code. The proposals in this bill focus on centering the whole child in all that we do and builds Minnesota's world-class education through a safe and welcoming environment with caring and qualified teachers so that students as unique individuals are seen, valued, and heard as they come into our school buildings every day. I want to highlight the importance of some of the items in this policy bill that dovetail nicely with the funding areas in the governor's budget. Creating a welcoming teaching and learning environment also requires recognizing, valuing, and supporting the individualized and varied needs of our students. We must see them and support them for who they are as individuals. There are so many proposals in this bill that do that. Defining a multi-tiered system of support, creating stronger expectations to support students' social emotional learning, modernizing the definition for students with limited or interrupted formal education, implementing next generation non-exclusionary discipline practices, and prohibiting suspension of students in kindergarten through grade three, embedding Indigenous education for all and ethnic studies into our academic standards, and a range of proposals to support our American Indian students. I cannot stress enough how well Chair Richardson's bill complements the proposals that you have heard carried by members and proposed by the governor alike. These include grants to implement their multi-tiered systems of support, a range of mental health supports like student support personnel aid, school-linked behavioral grants, school-based mental health screening, and innovative mental health grants for intermediates, as well as English learning funding, reducing the special education cross-subsidy, increases to American Indian education, and full-service community schools, just to name a few. Having caring and qualified teachers is another important prong in meeting the needs of our students. We know that supported teachers provide a stronger teaching and learning environment, and students need to see themselves in who is teaching them. And when students learn from diverse teachers, all of our students benefit. I'm thankful that this bill builds upon the funding passed last session by establishing a goal for a more diverse teacher workforce and embeds cultural competency expectations for our educators across a range of statutory programs. I encourage the committee to pair this important policy with our funding proposal to increase the Grow Your Own appropriation to meet the demand that we saw in applications from last year's funding. This bill acknowledges and honors the diversity of our students, families, and staff by keeping our students in the classroom through alternatives to suspension, creating opportunities for all students to see themselves in what they are learning, diversifying the teaching profession, promoting a range of other worthy policies to seek the increased transparency as well as accountability. I believe that we have many shared goals and an opportunity to act boldly to enact common sense policies and changes that will also support many of the funding proposals that you've heard this session. Thank you again for the opportunity to offer my support to this strong bill.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next on the list, Ronnie Mukherjee, PSEO senior at Wayzata High School and a University of Minnesota PSEO Student Association president. Ronnie, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for your time. My name is Ronnie Mukherjee, and I'm a senior at Wayzata High School, and I've done full-time PSEO at the University of Minnesota for 2 years. I'm also the president of the UMN PSEO Student Association, so I represent almost 700 other PSEO students, and I'm the program manager at People for PSEO. When enrolling in PSEO, I knew that I'd be exchanging the high school experience for more freedom. I've experienced college life and picked classes tailored to my career choice. PSEO also offers financial benefits, which I only learned about through my brother. His PSEO credit saved him 2 years and our family almost $130,000 in tuition and residence costs at the University of California, Berkeley. Throughout my PSEO journey, however, I felt alienated from my high school. Our PSEO website is missing some required information by the MDE, and almost all of my PSEO knowledge came from my older brother. This is a trend I've noticed, as instead of learning about PSEO from the high school, interested students usually talk to PSEO, other PSEO students or alumni. In fact, I found myself as a new contact for PSEO questions in our high school community. I support this bill because it improves the PSEO experience for everyone without requiring more funding or excessively harming high schools, and I hope you can see the value it brings as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mukherjee. Next, Tatum Rios, a PSEO alumni from Woodbury. Tatum, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tatum Rios, and I'm a PSEO alumni. I participated in PSEO from 2016 to 2018 full-time as a junior and senior in high school at Inver Hills Community College. And I just want to tell you guys a little bit about my story and how much of an impact it's had on me. I'm a first-generation college student. My parents don't have bachelor's degrees. My father's an immigrant from Mexico who doesn't have an education past third grade. Unfortunately, my parents hadn't been able to support me in my education, and it was up to me to figure out how I would find the funds to participate in college. Fortunately, I had heard from word of mouth about PSEO. But the problem is that the high school that I went to and many other high schools aren't really giving students this information and eliminating the gag rule and allowing colleges to display this information and tell students about PSEO is incredibly important. So when I started PSEO, I gained a lot of confidence in my abilities. I had an instructor at Inver Hills Community College who was a woman, who was an engineer who went back to teach. And this also shows that representation really matters in educators. Seeing a woman who was an engineer made me believe that I could become an engineer. And that was something I had never experienced in my entire life. I never would have imagined pursuing a degree in engineering. I'm currently a senior studying chemical engineering at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. And in the fall, I will pursue graduate studies in material science and engineering at MIT. But this would not have been possible without my participation in PSEO and going to the community college. I had never imagined myself making it this far, so I just want to say how impactful the program is, and there needs to be more awareness brought to the program, especially for minority students like myself. Thank you.
Ms. Rios, thank you for sharing that your inspiring experience. Much appreciated. Next, Zeke Jackson, PSEO alumni from Little Falls and Executive Director of People for PSEO. Mr. Jackson, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Zeke Jackson. I am a junior at the University of Minnesota and the Executive Director of People for PSEO. I did 2 years of PSEO at the University of Minnesota. And really, all I wanted to add in here was that there are a few supporting documents that we've shared with the committee. Thank you to Representative Richardson and to everyone else for the support on these PSEO amendments. Really important for the PSEO program. And in those documents, you'll find that you'll find some research from the department, some statistics from the Department of Education that shows the impact of the PSEO program on high school graduation rates and college completion rates. And that data shows that the PSEO program does a wonderful job of decreasing some of those education disparity rates. So thank you, everyone, for the support, and we look forward to working with you in the future as well.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Next, Idil Abdul, parent advocate. Ms. Abdul, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so much again for the opportunity to testify for keeping our young students and old students, for that matter, in the classroom. First, I want to thank the author of this bill, Richardson, for her tireless leadership in education and equity. I understand the principals don't support this bill, but I want to emphasize the principal is not the person who is in the classroom and prefers the child to be suspended. It is the teacher. So if the teachers support this bill and this language and want to keep our kids in the classroom, then please do so. The teachers are the ones who choose to refer the kid to the principal's office. The principal, as you know, just sort of suspends the kid and agrees with the teacher. I say this because often in politics, we concentrate on what divides us. But in this case, that the principals and the teachers are one in same in my eyes. Mr. Chair, I humbly ask you to carry the suspension language in this legislative session to the finish line. I'm going to be emailing you probably daily during the conference committee just to keep reminding you to please carry this during the negotiations. And I want to say that to those that say there are laws that are against discrimination, you are right. There are laws that are against discrimination. It's illegal to discriminate against anyone because of the color of their skin or even disability. So then what's the problem? Why do we have uneven numbers when the behaviors are the same, but the color or disability status of the student is different? And you can read a little bit of my thing here, but I chose to tell you a little story. I was traveling with my son. Even I can have biased lenses. I was traveling with my son to Disney a few years ago. He was about 10 or 11. He's 19 now. And in the airport, they have TSA cares, or at least before Corona, I don't know what they have now, where they send you somebody to help you if you have somebody, a kid with autism. They help you navigate through the airport because these kids get overwhelmed. So when we got to Orlando, there was an African-American man, and he was about 10 minutes late. And I was so mad. I was like, you're late. I can't handle this kid by myself. Why are you late? And he was like, ma'am, I'm sorry. I'll help you. And I was like, who's your supervisor? I'm going to complain. I write a long complaint, and he helped me, but he was only 10 minutes late. And then coming back, when we came back to Minneapolis, the person who TSA sent this time was a white person, a white male. He was half an hour late. And he was constantly talking, didn't apologize. He just kept talking. And I was like, you're late. And what are you doing? And when we got to the elevator coming down to my car, our car, he looked at my son and he said, does your son have autism? And I said, yes. Why? And he said, me too. I immediately melted. Anything he was doing that was wrong, I didn't care. I didn't see. All of a sudden, I started saying, you are doing fantastic. You're doing such a good job. Let me tell your supervisor how good you are. Why? For me, it's not the color, because I can relate to him. I can relate to this person because he has autism. My son has autism. I wanted to be kind. I wanted just to help him. And I think I tipped him like $200. That's probably the most tip I've given somebody. I gave him all I had, and I was like, here's my number. If you ever need anything, call me. The point I'm trying to say, and what Richardson is trying to do, is that racism doesn't, or discrimination doesn't happen consciously. It's unconscious. And what she's saying is that could we just eliminate it and level the education field so that, because we all have these lenses that we use to be biased, even without thinking about it. So again, I thank you as always for your time. Please carry this bill to the finish line. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Abdul. Next on the list, Matt Shaver, Policy Director with Ed Allies. Mr. Shaver, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Dabney, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver, Policy Director at Ed Allies. Thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts on House File 3401 as amended. Thank you to Representative Richardson for your thoughtful leadership in putting this bill together. I want to start by highlighting a number of great policies we strongly support. A ban on pre-K through third grade dismissals, which would protect our youngest learners, requiring schools to use non-exclusionary discipline practices, and expanding parental notification rights for parents of students who are suspended. These provisions would be a catalyst for schools and educators to finally let go of inequitable and ineffective exclusionary practices that systematically deny opportunities for students to grow and learn. Expansion of college and career readiness measures in World's Best Workforce to include participation in rigorous coursework by student group, and the addition of a ninth grade on track for graduation indicator on lines 30.29 through 30.33, 31.10 through 31.11. With the release of the 2021 high school graduation report showing a decrease in high school graduations statewide for the first time in 12 years, and the widening of an already unacceptable gap between student groups, this ninth grade indicator would provide an early warning system for students who fail more than one course in ninth grade so they get support and resources they need to get back on track. This provision was in both the House and Senate omnibus bills last year and didn't get done. We cannot let this opportunity to do something proactive to increase high school graduation rates slip away again. And we're grateful that a bipartisan group of House authors and leaders understands that. This bill also establishes a definition of teacher shortages in statute, which, given the ubiquity of the term in state law and public conversation, seems like a good idea to have one. prioritizing funding for programs that provide culturally responsive mentorship, induction, and retention for Tier 2 and Tier 3 teachers and teachers in shortage areas to ensure that they are supported and successful for students, reporting on hires and terminations by race and ethnicity, which will give us clear insight into the what and why and how of teacher churn, particularly for teachers of color. We would like to again see assurances that this report would separate out terminations from layoffs from teachers just leaving on their own. And while we strongly support issuing Tier 3 licenses to educators who have completed teacher prep at culturally specific minority-serving institutions and those who are prepared and taught abroad, we continue to have questions about the impact of needing to have student teaching experience, quote, comparable to the student teaching expectations in Minnesota. With different student teaching requirements from state to state, not to mention country to country, are we unintentionally creating a barrier with this proposed standard? And finally, we are grateful to Representative Richardson for not including misguided proposals to change tiered licensure that would have disproportionately harmed teachers of color and Tier 1 and Tier 2 educators who continue to show up for our students into, through, and hopefully soon out of pandemic schooling. Thank you all for your time today, and thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Last on my list of testifiers is Caitlin Snyder, Government Relations with Education Minnesota. Ms. Snyder, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. We represent 86,000 educators across the state, including teachers. First, I'd like to thank the Education Policy Committee for putting forward a bill with such strong policy provisions for our students of color. Thank you for including protections for our pre-K through grade 3 students to make sure that they have protections against suspensions because our kids can't learn if they're not in class. We appreciate the inclusion of several provisions relating to ethnic studies. Our kids should not have to wait until college to see themselves reflected in the materials in their classrooms. We appreciate the supports for American Indian students specifically, which are too numerous to list in my time here, but they include allowing kids to carry culturally significant sacred tobacco, protecting the student count versus the federal count for American Indian students, and sharing data with our sovereign tribal nations. This bill also supports our BIPOC kids by expecting more from the adults who serve them in schools. We applaud the inclusion of mental health training for our principals and adding culturally responsiveness to part of the principal evaluation. We also appreciate the supports for some of our most vulnerable teachers included in this bill, including allowing our Tier 1 teachers to join the union. These teachers cannot currently bargain for professional development. They cannot decline additional responsibilities assigned to them without fear of losing their jobs. And these teachers deserve the same protections as other teachers on the job. Yesterday's hearing, we heard a lot about due process protections, and so I'd also like to thank the committee for including that in their omnibus bill. And we look forward to working with the chairs and committee members as this moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Questions from members? I'm not sure I believe you. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just couldn't let this moment pass to thank Representative Richardson and the whole education policy team for putting together such a comprehensive bill that really will help our kids and our teachers and our school system bounce back from COVID and move into the future to make sure that we're reaching kids where they're at and making sure that they can be as successful as they can be. And I look forward to continuing this conversation. So just thank you so much, Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Representative Buchanan. Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have quite a few questions. First, let's start with Section 3, and that is for school board members where the pay is increased. Where did that ask come from, or is there some rationale behind that to see such a significant increase?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Zanski, for the question. I believe you're referring to Representative Howard's bill, and that came from requests that he was hearing about workforce shortages and the ability for school board members to be able to step in and help support. And so current law allows that to happen, currently up to a rate of about $8,000 or so. And so this would just increase the ability to, I think, up to about $20,000 that a school board member would be able to provide that level of support for schools that are facing workforce challenges.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then if I may continue, in the portion of the bill talking about online learning, and specifically maybe around the blended learning component, I see, you know, a lot of language that describes what would happen with a student or what a district could provide. Is there anything, I didn't see anything, have you had any conversation on what that would look like for teachers providing this instruction? I know last year we had quite a conversation about educators that were delivering either in-person instruction or online instruction, but there was a good recommendation not to have them being have them doing both at the same time. And I'm just wondering if that has been delineated at all.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sandstead, for the question. You know, I think with the COVID pandemic and the shift that had to happen really quickly, really led to these language changes that have been put forth within the MDE policy bill. You know, I would say that I think the intent of MDE, and if they want to follow up after this, would welcome them to do so. But the intent was to ensure that when there would be, for example, shifts to like crisis online learning, for example, that there would be consultation with representatives of the teachers to ensure that the plans that are being put in place are going to be plans that are going to be sustainable, and also ensuring that prior to school year starting, that parents and families are also aware of the process that would be in place for any type of crisis online learning.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Richardson, thank you for that answer. How about online learning outside of the crisis setting?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sandstead, as well. And so I would just say that in terms of the MDE policy bill, I would defer to them in terms of what occurred before the language came into play. I can speak to what's happened within education policy, and I would just lift up the fact that you know, we have heard feedback from Education Minnesota and both Ed Policy and also here as well. So there's always constant conversation going back and forth. And this has not, it did not rise up within Ed Policy as a red flag or concern.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Richardson. As an educator myself, I am going to flag this as a concern. If I think that we could maybe strengthen language here, it's just a recommendation that, and we can take this offline and talk about putting provisions in. So an educator responsible for delivering the instruction has some clarity around whether it's in person or online, but just to ensure maybe that's not happening simultaneously like we saw in some cases during COVID, that was quite problematic. Mr. Chair, if I may, one other question.
Certainly.
Thank you very much. Chair Richardson, in Article 2, Section 42, this is the part, I believe, talking about recess. Would an educator be able to keep a student in from recess for work completion? Not disciplinary, but maybe that student has lost a lot of time due to illness or something. Could they take that recess time to get caught up on work?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sandsteed, for the question. And I would just add that the recess for all bill recognizes the fact that when our younger students don't have the opportunity for recess, there are impacts as a result of that. And the way that the bill has been amended with the A11, it puts restrictions on situations in which a school, district, or a charter can use recess detention. So looking at that in terms of it being a punishment, and there are exceptions that are built in. If a student's parent or guardian specifically are consenting to like a recess detention, if it's something that comes up as part of a student's IEP and it's determined that it's appropriate based upon the needs of the student, and there would still be requirements that districts and charters are making reasonable attempts to notify a parent or guardian. And just as a practical matter, I think if a child is behind and there's a need for some additional time or support, that's really something that should be happening in connection with discussing that with the student's parent or guardian as well, if the idea is that they're going to be prevented from participating in something like recess.
Representative Sandsteed.
Thank you. I do think that maybe that's an area that we could talk a little bit about. For sure. Again, as an educator, I completely recognize the need for students to have recess. I don't know if you're aware, but oftentimes when students are allowed, for students who may be falling quite a bit behind, recess may be an opportunity for them to get caught up on some work with teachers to be working with them. If they are not given that time, then what happens is they're oftentimes pulled from other courses, specialists, different things like that to get caught up. So there's really a ripple effect, but maybe we can take that conversation offline and just see if we can come up with something that works a little bit better. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sandsteed. Other questions from members on Chair Richardson's House File 3401? Chair Richardson, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present the omnibus bill. And I, again, just want to lift up all the staff that made it possible for us to get to this point, and also to thank Representative Erickson as well. In Ed Policy, there were lots of areas of divide, but we also found some areas of agreement as well. And just want to lift up a couple of things. I think it's really critical with our schools that there is a welcome and learning environment, and that we are doing the work to close the opportunity gap within our state as well. From an education perspective, the data and the statistics don't look great in terms of Minnesota being at the bottom for graduation rates for students of color. We rank well below the national average in terms of the opportunity and achievement gap statistics that we see as well. A number of provisions have been lifted up, but just want to reaffirm the non-exclusionary discipline pieces that are within the bill, ethnic studies and Indigenous education, moving towards religious freedom as it relates to traditional tobacco, the teacher of color provisions. Also want to lift up the Metro Deaf School, who has been doing this work since the 90s, and this would give them the opportunity to continue to do the amazing work that they are doing with deaf students, deaf-blind students, and also students who are hard of hearing as well. I will note that last year I had the opportunity to meet with a large number of students across the state to hear directly from them about what would be most important. And the three of the issues that came up within that conversation was ethnic studies, civics, and personal finance. And so I want to ensure that I lift that piece up as well. And I know we're way past time, Mr. Chair, so I will end it with that. And thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. With that, Representative Richardson renews her motion to lay over House File 01 as amended for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Moving on then, our final bill hearing for today, we have House File 3937 from Representative Bennett. It's our intention to lay this bill over by 11:55 a.m. Representative Bennett, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3937 before the committee to lay it over for possible consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to mention that this legislation was brought to me by non-public education partners, and I'd like to read the following organizations that are involved in this. We have MinDependent, Minnesota Catholic Conference, Jewish Community Relations Council, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, Association of Christian Schools International, Catholic Schools Center of Excellence, AIM Higher Foundation, and the Catholic Community Foundation. So, Mr. Chair and members, just want to provide a short explanation of what House File 3937 does. It provides flexibility between non-public schools and school districts concerning transportation services. And this mutually beneficial flexibility took place during the Safe Learning Plan during the peacetime emergency in the 2021 school year. And once that peacetime emergency order was lifted, the Safe Learning Plan is no longer in effect, and it is not clear if this flexibility is available to school districts and non-public schools. This bill would just make that clear that it is still available. And all it does is allow flexibility to be available if the school district and non-public schools mutually agree. And Mr. Chair, I do have two or three testifiers, I believe.
I believe you do, Representative Bennett. First on that list is Tim Benz, president of MinDependent. Am I saying that right, Mr. Benz?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tim Benz. I am president of MinDependent. We are the largest statewide organization serving the non-public and independent school community. We have 172 member schools, which serve 39,000 students across the state. I also have the pleasure of serving as the chair of the Minnesota Non-Public Education Council for the Department of Education. I'm here today, as Representative Bennett mentioned, on behalf of a coalition of non-public and independent school organizations and stakeholders. We support House File 3937, which provides flexibility between non-public schools and districts regarding transportation services. And thank you, Representative Bennett, for bringing this forward. Minnesota Statute 123B.40 clarifies an important principle of education policy in the state, which is to provide certain forms of aid to all students, irrespective of their attendance at a public, non-public, or home school, including counseling aid, textbooks, nursing services, and transportation aid. The statute notes that the goal is to establish equity in certain state educational benefits. School districts administer the transportation aid and provide busing services to non-public school students in their district. This works very well in many places. Sometimes, however, non-public schools are required to change their start times on an annual basis or are stuck with whatever routes are offered to them, sometimes leading to schools starting as late as 10 a.m. in the morning. As you will hear from other testifiers, this may inhibit some families from attending their choice of school altogether. The pandemic obviously has exacerbated many circumstances in education, and non-public school, including the non-public school transportation, where the public and non-public schools may have been in differing or alternate learning models during a period of time. Fortunately, during the time the Safe Learning Plan was in effect, and with the consent of the school district, MDE allowed non-public schools to work directly with the busing companies to arrange transportation for their students. But once the peacetime emergency order was lifted, the Safe Learning Plan was no longer in effect, and it's unclear whether this flexibility is still available to school districts and non-public schools. Therefore, this legislation just makes permanent what was already policy during the peacetime emergency order, and by mutual agreement, school districts and non-public schools may create an alternative transportation arrangement for transporting non-public school students. Specifically, House File 3937 outlines options for this voluntary arrangement if the school district is contracting for bus and transportation services, or if the school district uses employees to provide these transportation services. We ask that you would please support this reform, which will be beneficial to the students and public school districts alike. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions if needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benz. Next, Shane Hofer, a parent from the White Bear Lake area. Mr. Hofer, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Shane Hofer, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 3937. I have to say, Mr. Chairman, it's a pleasure as always to see you. So I come before you today indeed as a White Bear Lake dad. I work for a nonprofit as a fundraiser, but I'm not here to represent my employer in any way. My beautiful wife, Minnie, and I are expecting our eighth baby this June. We're very excited. Our story begins in late fall 2020. At the time, Mindy and I had three of our children attending Frasati Catholic Academy in grades K through 7 with a fourth child in preschool. This is a school that took us years to figure out how to attend, a place we felt called to academically and spiritually, and which became the source of many blessings in our lives. Back then, we knew that the next year, now this year, 2021-22, that we would have four of our kids in grades K through 8 there. We embraced that plan, financial sacrifice and all. We finished our enrollment by February of 2021. We were all ready and looking forward to another year at Frasati. But our local school district announced transportation changes for 2021-22 this year, and everything changed. You see, to make this all work, we depend on busing for our kids to go to school, like many and most parents. In order to avoid shifting the school day start and end times by 2 hours to accommodate the new plan from the public school district, Frasati had to go and forego any semblance of a normal busing system, with school buses operating like they do at any public school you can name, both immediately before and after the beginning and end of the school day. That lack of busing broke our back. Mindy and I were forced to leave and unenroll our children from Frasati, the place we truly and very much sought to be, simply because Frasati didn't have options to seek alternative transportation solutions. The legislative remedy proposed today would have prevented any of that turmoil from affecting our family, and that's why I'm asking you to vote in support of House File 3937. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your service to Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Hofer. Always good to see you as well. Thank you for joining us today. Last on the list, Dr. Bill Hudson from Mounds Park Academy. Dr. Hudson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bill Hudson. I'm the head of school at Mounds Park Academy. We are pre-K through 12 independent school in Maplewood, Minnesota. And I also serve as president of the Minnesota Association of Independent Schools. And I am testifying today on behalf of that association, also known as MAIS. Just by way of background, MAIS is a diverse consortium of 18 independent schools in Duluth, St. Cloud, Faribault, and throughout the Twin Cities. We range in size, scope, and pedagogy. We are secular schools, single gender, boarding, religious, and non-denominational schools. In total, MAIS schools serve over 9,000 students who are socioeconomically, geographically, racially diverse, and employ over 3,500 Minnesotans. I'd like to thank Representative Bennett for bringing House File 3937 forward. I'll try to keep my comments brief. Those that testified previously did an excellent job of talking to the strengths and the purposes of this bill. I would just say that as all of us in education and society, we're carrying forward what we've learned during the pandemic, what has benefited our schools, our students, our society. And I think this the need that is addressed by this House file is one of those. I think it provides the flexibility for both boards and non-public schools that are necessary when it comes to transportation. I think it allows the and respects the diversity of local communities and relationships between non-public schools and public schools. And I believe that it better fosters and strengthens, or at least has the potential to the, strengthen and foster the relationships between non-public schools and the public schools district. So thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of 3937. I appreciate your service and leadership and all that you do to support our Minnesota students. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hudson. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this hearing. We received no request for public testimony. Questions from members regarding House File 3937. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I did not get a chance to, I listened to most of the education policy committees, but I must have missed the testimony on this one, and I didn't get a chance to check the cross-references. I'm just trying to understand what exactly this changes of what's already in statute, and then maybe, I guess my concern too is, I mean, we heard very compelling testimony with about transportation sparsity with Representative Sandstein's bill, especially with the challenges our folks are having up in Bemidji District and the distances they have to go. So I'm just trying to figure out how this all works together. I don't know who would be the right person to ask, or nonpartisan staff, maybe what this exactly changes, because I'm having trouble tracking this morning. I'm sorry.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps we could have nonpartisan staff go through those changes. And Representative Joaquin, it doesn't change any of the funding mechanisms, but it allows something that's currently unclear, allows both school boards and these non-public schools to work together to a mutually beneficial plan. And their hands are kind of tied now, but I'm going to see if nonpartisan could maybe bring some clarity here.
Who would be the best nonpartisan staff to respond to Representative Joaquin's question?
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to. Ms. Parra may want to as well, either way.
Thank you, Mr. Strong.
Representatives Joaquin and Bennett, the issue, I think, is both one of clarity and one of ensuring that the public school is reimbursed for the transportation as they currently are if it's done through a contract. And let me briefly explain. So under the non-public pupil transportation aid, the aid is based on the average expenditures per pupil transported in the public school district times the number of non-public pupils transported. So the first part of the bill is ensuring that those non-public students, even if they're done under a separate contract, are still counted in the way that non-public pupil transportation aid is calculated. So that ensures there's no change to the aid amount. The second part of the bill is the part that the testifiers have referred to as clarifying what happened during the Safe Learning Plan. And this is an arrangement that exists in some districts where because of the way the rules for non-public pupil transportation work, the requirement on the school district where the non-public student lives is to transport that student to the border, for example. And so if the non-public school is in the next district, just over the border, it's not the resident district's responsibility to get the student from the border to that school. So this bill essentially simplifies that arrangement and says, hey, if the non-public folks want to kick in whatever percent of the cost would be to send the bus the rest of the way, that can be included in the way that service is delivered. The other thing that was mentioned had to do with the timing of this. The state's pupil transportation laws for both for all the services, including the non-public pupil transportation service, put the manner and scheduling of stops and the time of the routes all under the control of the public school board. And because sometimes the public school schedules don't align with the non-public schedule, particularly for those districts that run several routes with their buses each day, this would allow a separate contract arrangement that could be outside of those scheduled start times. So that if a district's response were to say, we'll run a fourth bus route at 10 to deliver the students at 10 after we've run the elementary, middle, and secondary schedules, that it would allow an alternative to that where a contract could be reached separately to provide that transportation service. Happy to say more, Mr. Chair, but I know the time is short.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. Ms. Parra, did you want to weigh in as well? Or
no, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's just that last piece that sounds like there wasn't enough clarity to allow that extra contract to happen. I'm just concerned, does that trump the public school if they don't have enough bus drivers to provide for that extra contract? I mean, we're running really short on bus drivers nowadays.
Is Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I think it's important to remember that this is a mutually agreed upon decision between the public and the non-public schools. So you're certainly correct that there's a shortage in the bus driver world, but to the extent that the public school is agreeing to this, it may simplify its world as well.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you. As always, Mr. Strom can always answer my questions. So thank you very much.
Yes, we can. We haven't played Stump the Staff much this year. Seeing no other questions and seeing the clock, Representative Bennett, any closing comments on House File 3937?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for hearing this bill. And I love that it's mutually beneficial. It needs to be mutually agreed upon in order to happen. And I also love that when we find something that works well and it's mutually beneficial, that we keep it going. And I think that's what this does. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. And with that, Representative Bennett renews her motion to lay over House File 3937 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Thank you, Representative Bennett. Members, we will see you tomorrow, Friday, April 1st, no fooling, at 3 p.m. Thank you for your time and attention today. With that, members, we are adjourned.